This is program C, 1083. And if you would, please open to Hebrews chapter 7, verse number 11, as we pick up this very chewy, that is, solid food passage about how Melchizedek from Genesis chapter 14 and Psalm 110 is symbolic of the high priesthood of Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. That the priesthood of Levi, the priesthood of the high priest Aaron from the days of Moses, was never sufficient to eradicate sin. That if it had been, then there would be no need for a different priest from the order of Melchizedek to come around. And that's what Psalm 110 predicts, is that even though the Jewish people had the Aaronic priesthood, the Levitical priesthood, the prophecy was God was going to swear on himself that the Messiah, his son, would be a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. So they knew that that was coming. And now the author of Hebrews is trying to explain how and why it occurred. Now, before we go any farther, a couple of things. Number one, I do not believe that Melchizedek of Genesis was Jesus. I know that there are many people that teach that, that he is this Christophany, that he was an appearance of Jesus in ancient times. But I don't think so. I think he was a genuine historical figure that we will meet someday in eternity. But he was a high priest of that time period that helped Abraham out. That's my belief, that he's just used as a symbol. The other thing is, you have to understand the situation with the sacrificial system of the Old Testament, that the Jewish people felt confident that their sins were being forgiven through that system. But in reality, their sins were just being pushed forward in time. They were being kept on account until Jesus could genuinely take them away, genuinely pay them off. The illustration I like to use the best is a modern illustration, and that is that the Old Testament sacrificial system was like a credit card, and the bill to be paid was sin. And so when you use a credit card, you basically go, I'm pushing this debt forward. I'll pay this thing off later. And so you're just pushing the debt forward in time, you're not really paying it off. Yeah, you might make some payments on it as you go along, but with the interest racking up, too many people just keep adding to the debt rather than really significantly paying off the balance. So that's kind of the way that the sacrificial system worked, is that you felt like something was happening to help you, but the thing that really needed to happen was still in the future. And honestly, these guys did not know what it was going to cost. Then Jesus comes along and he pays the debt in full. And even on the cross, when he cries out, "It is finished," that's the typical English translation. He was actually saying in Greek, "paid in full." So he was declaring that the debt was completely retired by what he did. And so that's the distinction that we need to draw here between the sacrificial system of the law, which dealt with sin, but not permanently, not completely, and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, which fulfilled all of those credit promises of the past in those sacrifices. All right? So here we go, back to Hebrews chapter 7, verse 11. Now, if perfection was through the Levitical priesthood, for on the basis of it, the people received the law, so the Levitical priesthood was tied in with the Mosaic law, what further need was there for another priest to arise according to the order of Melchizedek and not be designated according to the order of Aaron? So, very simple question. Why would we need a Melchizedek line priest if the Aaronic Levitical priest was working? Verse 12, for when the priesthood is changed of necessity, there takes place a change of law also. And this is part of the large point that's being made in this book. And that is the Mosaic law was fading out of sight after Jesus' death and resurrection. The last vestiges of it, the temple and the sacrificial system, would be completely retired and taken out of the way in just a couple of years from the writing of this book of Hebrews. Now, I've shared with you before, I think that this letter is probably written right around the last part of 65, going into the very early part of 66. The Jewish rebellion against Rome broke out in the spring of 66. And by the summer of 70, the temple and the Jewish religious sacrificial system was totally gone, never to return again. And yes, I mean that literally. I do not believe that there will be a new temple with new sacrifices instituted. I don't think that's required by the prophecies. I think that's a misunderstanding of the prophecies dealing with the time leading up to Jesus. And even if I'm incorrect on that, any type of reinstitution of animal sacrifices would be a spit in the face of Jesus the Messiah, because his sacrifice was sufficient. His once-for-all death finished the need for animal sacrifices. So there will be no need of return to that. So that entails a change in the way laws are looked at. So again, verse 12, for when the priesthood is changed, that is when we go from the Levitical priesthood to the Melchizedek priesthood of Jesus, of necessity there takes place a change of law also. We go from the Mosaic law to the royal law, the law of love and liberty, the law of salvation in the name. Verse 13, for the one concerning whom these things are spoken belongs to another tribe from which no one has officiated at the altar, meaning Jesus. Jesus does not come from the Levitical tribe. He has relatives in the Levitical tribe, but he himself is not counted from that tribe. He's counted from the tribe of Judah. Verse 14, for it is evident that our Lord was descended from Judah, a tribe with reference to which Moses spoke nothing concerning priests. Now, the Judah tribe is the royal tribe, and the Levitical tribe was the priestly tribe. Verse 15, and this is clearer still, if another priest arises according to the likeness of Melchizedek, who has become such not on the basis of law of physical requirement, but according to the power of an indestructible life. And so his reference there is, you became a priest in the Jewish system of sacrifice because you were from the tribe of Levi. That's what got you there. And actually, you couldn't be a high priest unless you were from the physical line of Aaron. And so that's the only way you could get there, is through physical genealogy. But the Melchizedek priesthood, according to Psalm 110, is all about living forever, being a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. And because of that, only Jesus is going to be able to be in that position, because he alone has no beginning, has no end, just always is. Verse 17, for it is attested of him, so, and here comes our quote once again from Psalm 110, verse 4, You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. End quote. For on the one hand, there is a setting aside of a former commandment because of its weakness and uselessness. Now that's a description of the Mosaic Law and the Levitical priesthood. It is set aside or it's retired because it can't get the job done that needs to be done. It was never designed to get that job done. It was just the credit card pushing the debt forward. It was not the paying off of the principal of that debt. Verse 19, for the law made nothing perfect. That just reinforced what I said. The law never fixed anything perfectly, permanently. It just pushed the problem forward. As we kind of say about debt in America, it kicked the can down the road. It didn't get rid of the can. And on the other hand, there is a bringing in of a better hope through which we draw near to God. Remember the hope from earlier? The hope that is this anchor for our soul. It's anchored beyond the veil in the most holy place where God is seated and where Jesus has gone as our forerunner. This hope of forgiveness and a new body that will never have a problem ever again, all of that. So the new covenant that we're talking about now is all about the new hope, the better hope. Verse 20, and inasmuch as it was not without an oath, for they indeed became priests without an oath, that is, the Levitical priests became priests just because they were Levitical. They belonged to the order of Levi, and that's what made them priests. They didn't have to have an oath made in their behalf. But he, with an oath through the one who has said to him, quote, Yahweh has sworn and will not change his mind, you are a priest forever, end quote. That's Psalm 110, verse 4, which is again a reminder that God the Father swore on himself that he would make Jesus a priest of the order of Melchizedek, and that would be a forever job. And that's why he is the better priest. Verse 22, so much the more also Jesus has become the guarantee of a better covenant. So the old covenant that we're talking about here is the Mosaic covenant. It is on its way out. It's on its last legs. It will soon be retired. And then the only thing that will remain is the thing that everything else pointed toward, which was Jesus and the new covenant. See, the book of Hebrews is one of the best books to deal with this issue of whether or not we're still under the Mosaic Law. The answer is no, because the Mosaic Law's whole purpose was to prepare the Jewish people in particular for the coming of the Messiah who would deal with the big problem, sin, and once he'd taken care of that, the Mosaic Law was no longer needed. It had served its purpose. It was the pedagogos, the slave leader of children, to make sure they got to their teacher. Once they got them to the teacher, their services were no longer required. And so that's what the Mosaic Law was for. Verse 23. The former priests, on the one hand, existed in greater numbers because they were prevented by death from continuing. Now, what we've got in mind here is a series of priests. There was a ton of high priests. First, you have Aaron, then you have Eleazar, then you have Phinehas, and then it just goes right down the line over and over and over again. All these different priests that serve as high priests. The reason there were so many of them is because every last one of them died and was replaced by the next guy. And that's different with Jesus as the high priest after the order of Melchizedek, verse 24. But Jesus, on the other hand, because he continues forever, holds his priesthood permanently. So God swore to him I will make you a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. So once he died and paid the sin price, he rose again and ascended on high, and he functions as our high priest, and he will never, ever die again. So he does not need a successor. He does not need somebody to step into that role after he dies. That's a huge difference between the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. Verse 25, therefore, he is able also to save us forever those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. So he saves us forever because we're drawing near to him, and he's drawing near to God, and he's making intercession on our behalf, and he's doing it forever. And so this is how, by sticking with Jesus, we can be saved forever. But the opposite is also true. The danger, and that is, if you don't stick with Jesus, you can't be saved forever. And this letter is written because at least the potential of some of these Jewish believers in Jesus was to abandon him and his name because they were being persecuted in the area around Rome at this time to death. And these Jewish believers could always hide in the very legally protected Judaism. And the author of Hebrews is saying, you can't do that, because Jesus is the point of Judaism. And if you abandon Jesus, you've abandoned real Judaism. And you can't be saved, because Judaism is being transitioned from its old covenant, its temporary covenant, into its intended new and permanent covenant, the covenant of the Messiah. Oftentimes, I get frustrated by prophecy teachers that try to critique something that they refer to as replacement theology, the idea that the church has replaced Israel. And I do have my own problems with people who take that tact, because they're not really looking at the prophecies of the Old Testament properly, I don't think. But the problem is that by critiquing them with those words, it misses the point, which is that the church is supposed to be the legitimate continuation of Israel. That Israel was supposed to embrace its Messiah, and at that same time, a whole bunch of non-Israelis, non-genetic relatives of Abraham, were going to be grafted into Israel. And all of this is referred to as the church. It's one body. It just moves through time, and the covenant is just transitioning right along with it. I think that's the legitimate way to think of this. Verse number 26. For it was fitting for us to have such a high priest, holy, innocent, undefiled, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens, who does not need daily, like those high priests, to offer up sacrifices first for his own sins and then for the sins of the people, because this he did once for all when he offered up himself. So we should have a high priest who is holy, innocent, undefiled. That's all meaning that they're perfect. They don't have sin. Separated from sinners in the sense that they don't have sin. And exalted above the heavens, meaning they are in the presence of God the Father. And we need to have a high priest who doesn't have to first go to God and say, please God, forgive me for my sins, so that I can come back later and ask you to forgive other people's sins. We need somebody who can just simply go straight to God and say, God, I'm dying for these other people's sins. I don't have sin, but they do, and I want to take care of that. And that's exactly what Jesus did, once for all time. We do not need multiple deaths of Jesus in order to save us from our sins. Once was sufficient, which is one of the reasons I object to the concept of crucifying the host, the mass of Jesus, over and over and over again in certain ceremonies that has been established in medieval times and maybe just slightly before that. It's not necessary. Jesus died once, and we as individual Christians just simply need to come to Him, to draw near to Him in order to have that forgiveness applied to us. That's the way it works. Verse number 28. For the law appoints men as high priests who are weak, meaning they're human, they've got problems. But the word of the oath, which came after the law, appoints a son made perfect forever. Another mention of the Psalm 110, verse 5 or 6, whichever it was. I'm swearing today that you are a priest after the order of Melchizedek forever. So Jesus is not weak. He was human, but he was not weak in giving in to sin. And he was appointed by an oath and therefore can be the perfect interceding priest on our behalf. Which brings us to chapter number 8 now. Now, the main point in what has been said is this. Don't you like it when an author says, let me sum up what I'm trying to explain to you? We have such a high priest who has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens. So we have the perfect priest, Jesus, who is going to live forever and intercede on our behalf. He doesn't need to get forgiveness for his own sins because he didn't sin, and he used his own life to gain our forgiveness. So that's the type of guy that we've got. That's the type of high priest that we have at the right hand of God the Father's throne. A minister in the sanctuary and in the true tabernacle, which the Lord pitched, not man. Now we're going to get to the idea that the tabernacle, the Temple of Solomon, the Temple of Zerubbabel, which was renovated by King Herod the Great, those are physical buildings, constructions that simply symbolized the real thing, which was God's heavenly throne, God's throne room, where Jesus would stand forever as our intercessor, acting as our high priest. Verse 3, for every high priest is appointed to offer gifts and sacrifices, so it's necessary that this high priest also have something to offer. All right, so we've got the comparison still going back and forth. In the earthly temple, priests from the Levitical tribe are carrying in offerings, sacrifices, on a regular basis to do their work of intercession. Well, Jesus is also offering something. Now, he's going to offer it not here on planet Earth. He offers it in the throne room of God, in the heavenly sanctuary, the real sanctuary. Verse 4, now, if he were on Earth, he would not be a priest at all, since there are those who offer the gifts according to the law. So if when we're talking about Jesus on planet Earth, he never went into the inner part of the sanctuary of the temple because he wasn't a priest. He wasn't of the tribe of Levi. And he could not have gone up on the altar of sacrifice and he couldn't have thrown in any type of sacrifices there because that would not have been according to the law. It would have been a breaking of the law, and Jesus doesn't do that. So that's the point. So he also wouldn't need to do it because that was already being fulfilled by those who were of the Levitical tribe. Verse 5, who serve a copy and a shadow of the heavenly things. So the earthly temple and all its accoutrements, all of its altars and menorahs and tables of showbread and golden altars of incense, all of that is a shadow and a copy of the real thing. Just as Moses was warned by God when he was about to erect the tabernacle for, quote, "See," he says, "that you make all things according to the pattern which was shown to you in the mountain," end quote. Now, we will get back to this idea of the symbolism later in the book, but he introduces that concept here, that Moses was given very precise details because these things would serve as an illustration of salvation. And we'll talk about the comparison between the symbol and what it symbolized in Christianity. But we'll do that later. First, we got to keep on track here with Jesus is serving in the real sanctuary while the priests are serving here in the copy and the shadow sanctuary. Verse 6, but now he, meaning Jesus, has obtained a more excellent ministry, that is a more significant ministry than the Levitical priests, by as much as he also is the mediator of a better covenant, which has been enacted on better promises. So once again, the author pulls no punches. He makes no bones about it. Jesus is more significant than any human high priest. He is better than any sacrifice ever offered in the sanctuaries because he is bringing about the new and intended covenant of God, whereas all these other things were part of the old temporary covenant that will pass away very shortly after this book was delivered.